You're listening to The Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper.
That's my pal, and I'm too. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
You're my pal, too. What a nice thing to say.
Thank you.
I'll see you later.
Alligator.
After a while, crocodile.
After a while, crocodile.
Okay. I'll see you in a bit. Okay. Go take care of the little one, okay?
Okay.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, we have a lot to talk about tonight. Number one, I heard today, I've not seen any documentation as of yet. This is just what I've heard, so do not take it as fact. It is only what I've heard, and I've heard that it's been put out by the Texas Independence Movement over the radio, and I had a report from my Texas station chief that this was true, and I heard it on two broadcasts today. So, while I have not seen any paperwork or documentation, and you must understand that, do not repeat this as true until I can tell you that we have actually seen the documentation. They claim that the World Court has granted Texas their independent sovereign status as the Republic of Texas. However, there's a few things wrong with it, again, as usual. If it is true, as they say, that they were granted this on default, and then on the two broadcasts that I heard said that it was granted on default, which meant that they were right, and that is wrong. If it's granted on default, it just means merely that the other party did not show up and therefore lost by default, and has nothing to do with the merits of the case or whether they are right or wrong. And that's the truth of the matter. But they also don't understand that it was not won by default. As I read to you last night, I'm going to read it to you again from the same publication. And let me give you that source again so that you'll know. 83rd Congress, 2nd Session, Senate, Document Number 164, Review of the United Nations Charter, Compilation of Staff Studies Prepared for the Use of the Subcommittee on the United Nations Charter of the Committee on Foreign Relations, pursuant to Senate Resolution 126, 83rd Congress, presented by Mr. Wiley, August 2nd, Legislative Day, July 2nd, 1954, ordered to be printed with illustrations, United States Government Printing Office, Washington, 1955. Let me read to you from page 233, ladies and gentlemen. The United States filed a declaration of acceptance of the court's compulsory jurisdiction in 1946 on a reciprocity basis and subject to termination after 5 years on 6 months' notice. They have not failed to renew their agreement since it was made. The United States declaration further stipulates. Now listen very carefully to this, and you'll understand why the United States did not appear in the World Court because of this action, that the declaration does not apply to A, disputes the solution of which the parties shall entrust to other tribunals by virtue of agreements already in existence or which may be concluded in the future, or B, disputes with regard to matters which are essentially within the domestic jurisdiction of the United States of America as determined by the United States of America, or C, disputes arising under a multilateral treaty, unless one, all parties to the treaty affected by the decision are also parties to the case before the court, or two, the United States of America specially agrees to jurisdiction. This falls, ladies and gentlemen, under B. B. And it falls under B simply because the people in the Texas independence movement did not satisfy A. You see, they took their case to the Supreme Court of the state of Texas. Now, I spent a good portion of the day on the telephone to the Supreme Court of Texas and to the Supreme Court of the United States of America, talking to people who know about these things. I also, just in case I was being scammed by these people, talked to some experts, people that I personally know who are experts both in statute law and the United States Code, the UCC, which is the Uniform Commercial Code, and the common law. And all of these people informed me that when the Supreme Court of the state of Texas denied to hear the case, let me tell you something. You see, the Supreme Court of Texas did not state, according to the people that I talked to today, that they did not have jurisdiction. They just merely refused to hear the case. There's a big difference there. And we're sending for documentation just in case they lied to me, which they may have done. So don't go out and say that Bill Cooper said this. I'm repeating what I was told by people at the Supreme Court of the state of Texas today, whom I talked to. So I asked them how to obtain the documentation. They told me we have sent for that documentation. We'll find out whether they denied jurisdiction or whether they denied to hear the case, as they so informed me. I was also informed that the people in the Texas sovereignty movement, or the Texas independence movement, should have then taken it to the United States Supreme Court, which they did not. So they did not exhaust their legal remedies within the United States of America, which they should have done, and the world court, in fact, should have refused to hear it until it was heard by the, or turned down to be heard by the Supreme Court of the United States of America. The United States of America considers this dispute to be essentially within the domestic jurisdiction of the United States of America as determined by the United States of America, and therefore does not grant jurisdiction to the World Court or the International Court of Justice under the United Nations. And refusing to grant jurisdiction, they cannot show up in the court, because if they do, they then grant the jurisdiction that they are not granting. The people in Texas have not exhausted their remedies within the legal system of the United States of America. And until they do, the United States of America is going to ignore them. Unless they get antsy, and unless they get up on some high horse and do something stupid, in which case the United States of America will send a military force to deal with them. That's what I was told. So, that's where it stands, ladies and gentlemen. They are now claiming the sovereign independent nation state of the Republic of Texas. I called some relatives and friends who live in the state of Texas, who I know are patriots, who love this country and are dedicated to the Constitution of not only their state, but the United States of America. And I told them about this and asked them what they thought, and what they told me I cannot repeat over the air. And I think that's the reaction that these people are going to get from most of the people in the state of Texas, for they have brought together a small handful, and by handful I mean possibly between 200 and 300 people, who voted for president, vice president, and all of these other things, and then started all this stuff without informing or educating or without the consent or the political blessings of the other 10 or more million people who live in the state of Texas. I can tell you right now, these people have really gone about it all in the wrong way. I also heard on the radio today that filing their papers in the World Court and submitting documentation to the Security Council of the United Nations in order to get them to order the United States to accept this ruling does not grant the United Nations or the World Court jurisdiction over the Republic of Texas, and that's more blathering bullshit, as anybody who knows anything about jurisdiction will tell you. When you appear in their court and file papers in their court, you have granted them jurisdiction. And when you ask them to perform in your behalf to force another nation to obey an edict that they issued in your behalf, you are under their jurisdiction. You have granted them government status above your sovereign, or it should be non-sovereign, nation state. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is fact. Put that in your pipe and smoke it. And today I received a phone call from the ice queen of the world. This woman was so cold and icy. She said that she was the secretary for the ambassador for the Republic of Texas, Mr. McLaren, and wanted to get us together to resolve this. There's nothing to resolve. Actually, until they start doing the right things. But I was polite, and she wanted to know if he could do a radio show. And I said yes, and I thought she was talking about getting him on my radio show. But she wasn't. She was talking about me going on his radio show. And I said no, but I'd be happy to bring him on my radio show as a guest. Well, I'm telling you, this woman was so icy cold and so standoffish and uppity with her nose about 6 miles in the air, that I was polite until the almost very end of the telephone conversation, when she told me that she would have to consult with Ambassador McLaren and get back to me, and that did it, folks. I don't know who the hell she thought she was talking to, but that's when I blew it, and I told her point blank, lady, until you get the permission and the authority from the other 10 million people who live in the state of Texas, you don't have an ambassador. And I told her to quit masturbating and hung up on it. And I bet that knocked some of the icicles off of her upper lip. I certainly hope that it did. Also, how can I say this? I'm going to say it this way. The general manager of WWCR today was threatened by Disinformation Detour to sue them for a broadcast that I did. And I had a real good laugh over that one, I've got to tell you. Also today, I had a phone call from Disinformation Detour, and was threatened. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine what I told the person? Oh, he was very polite and very slick, just like greased you know what, and wanted an 8x10 color photograph of me for an article that he's going to do in his Disinformation Detour. So I told him to stick it where the sun don't shine, and that's when they called WWCR and said that they were going to sue WWCR. So, of course, you know, Disinformation Detour, of course, is a fictional entity. You all understand that, don't you? So, since they Disinformation Detour threatened to sue WWCR and threatened me today on the telephone before they called WWCR. Veritas, which is not connected with WWCR, is going to do a story on Disinformation Detour. How about that? I just love this, folks. This is just absolutely incredible. Don't go away. I've got an awful lot of stuff to tell you about that you need to know. And it's all important. Stuff you've never heard anywhere else. And until you hear it here, aren't likely to.
looking for in the trees. Like a boat without a mast, struggling with the tides of destiny between the future and the past. I'm a lightning. I'm a sea. I'm an air that you breathe.
Well, folks, I hate to say it, but I was right once again. Remember, I told you that when the peace was signed, ladies and gentlemen, between Syria and Israel, that the United States would send troops to monitor the Golan Heights. Said it right on this broadcast. I didn't say maybe. I said absolutely. It would be the United States that would patrol the Golan Heights. And in the Orange County Register, in a section called World, Tuesday, January the 9th, 1996, Perry offers U.S. troops to monitor the Golan. Diplomacy, Perez says he would welcome an international force to maintain peace. Associated Press, Jerusalem. The United States will station troops in the Golan Heights to monitor a peace treaty between Israel and Syria of the two sides. If the two sides ask for help, Defense Secretary William Perry said Monday. Well, Perez has already done it. And a couple of car bombings or blow up a bus and kill a couple of people, and the other side will do it also. I hope none of those things happen. I hope nobody ever has to die anywhere. But we all know better than that, don't we? So you can look for the next place that we send United States troops to be the Golan Heights. Now, also received communication from my Michigan station chief today, what we call an SCR, station chief report. And in that report includes information on the new township ordinance for the village of Oxford, Michigan. Now listen to this, folks. You always wondered how they're going to know who's got guns and where they keep them and how to get into your house and all of that kind of stuff in order to get them. Listen to this. This ordinance will require homeowners to submit to the fire department floor plans of their home with the location of all guns and ammunition highlighted. Also, the ordinance will require official inspections once each year. Ay, Chihuahua. And that's not the only town that's happening in. We've had reports from other station chiefs. It appears to be one of those things that goes through the Council of State Governors and is introduced in a lot of states and in a lot of small towns and places like that. So watch for this kind of legislation to be introduced with your city council or your county supervisors or your state legislature. It has nothing to do with the fire department. Guns and ammunition in small amounts, which you find in most homes, is not dangerous. Ladies and gentlemen. And remember I told you a long time ago that Newt Gingrich is not on our side, never has been. He's a phony conservative. He's not a conservative at all. He's an extreme left-wing radical liberal. In fact, he's a socialist who wants to propel us into the New World Order. The Executive Intelligence Review just did a report, and I got this report, let me see, from John Covici, And it's dated January 6, 1996, which is a condensation, so to speak, of the executive intelligence report issued by the Executive Intelligence Review. While Speaker of the House, Newt Gingrich, parades himself around as the leader of the conservative revolution to restore American civilization, the Georgia congressman is, in fact, a leading proponent of some of the most rabid New Age policies, is a longtime protege of former President Jimmy Carter, which is common knowledge in the state of Georgia, and is an important player in an ongoing drive led by British social engineers to dismantle the United States constitutional system of representative self-government and replace it with what one Gingrich backer has called electronic feudalism. Remember, I told you. I hate being right all the time. It really bothers me, ladies and gentlemen, because the more right I am, the worse shape we're in. And that's extremely disturbing. These are among the shocking findings contained in a 24-page feature published in this week's edition of Executive Intelligence Review magazine. Based on a review of more than a dozen biographical and autobiographical accounts of Gingrich's career. As long ago as 1989, I was warning people, and particularly in the state of Georgia, about Newt Gingrich, because he backed all the anti-gun legislation, and a lot more. And if you could have read some of the articles and letters and things that he published in the Atlanta Constitution, you would have never allowed him to obtain the position that he has in the House of Representatives. It's also based on autobiographical accounts of Gingrich's career, interviews with several Gingrich associates, and an analysis of over 5,000 pages of internal documents from Gingrich's political action committee called GOPAC and his tax-exempt foundation, the Progress and Freedom Foundation. The Executive Intelligence Review study links Gingrich to a Tavistock Institute project called Anticipatory Democracy that was launched in the early 1970s. AD, as the project was known to its participants, was spearheaded by third-wave futurist Alvin Toffler, an author that Gingrich frequently quotes. In consultation with Dr. Kenneth Boulding, an Oxford-trained economist who became a leading operative for British intelligence's London-based Psychological Warfare Center, the Tavistock Institute, inside the United States. One of Boulding's Tavistock missions was the creation of the 1960s New Left Students for a Democratic Society, or SDS. The AD effort was bankrolled by the Aspen Institute for Humanistic Studies, the leading American offshoot of Lord Bertrand Russell's World Government and International Socialist Apparatus. Toffler has been publicly identified as a longtime spiritual advisor to the Speaker of the House, and he is a fixture at every one of Gingrich's Progress and Freedom Foundation conferences. In January 1995, Gingrich penned the foreword to Toffler's latest piece of futuristic drivel, The Politics of the Third Wave, Creating a New Civilization. Creating a new civilization. This is the Speaker of the House, supposed to protect and defend the Constitution, wants to create a new civilization. AD, according to a 1978 Toffler essay cited in the Executive Intelligence Review study, sprang from the recognition that our political institutions and processes, the mechanics of representative government, the entire apparatus of democracy as we know it, including voting, elections, parties, parliaments, and the like, are expressions not of some undying mystical human commitment to freedom, but of the spread of industrial civilization. As the industrial way of life spread, representative government spread with it. This era is now screeching to a halt. Industrial civilization is now in a state of terminal crises, and a new, radically different civilization is emerging to take its place on the world stage. Simply put, ladies and gentlemen, the political technology of the industrial age is no longer appropriate technology for a new civilization taking form around us, according to Mr. Gingrich and Mr. Toffler. Our politics are obsolete. Toffler proposed instead that the United States Constitution be scrapped and replaced by a series of global super agencies controlling finance, raw materials, and employment. While at the grassroots level, elaborate feedback systems would stifle dissent through sophisticated social engineering and brainwashing. This is Newt Gingrich's favorite author. He wrote the introduction to the book. This book is required reading in his university course. This one-world plan was elaborated by Toffler in a 1975 book called The Ecospasm Report. Throughout this period, according to the Executive Intelligence Review report, Newt Gingrich was an avid follower of the Toffler Third Wave Post-Industrial Society lunacy. In 1975, when a group of leading Fabian social engineers, including Toffler, anthropologist Dame Margaret Mead, radical environmentalist Lester Brown, New Age sociologist Willis Harmon, and Elise Boulding, wife and partner of Tavistock's Kenneth Boulding, formed an ad hoc committee on anticipatory democracy to inundate the U.S. Congress with the New Age propaganda, Gingrich, an associate professor at West Georgia State College, was a signator and activist. In fact, Gingrich was at the time in charge of then-Governor Jimmy Carter's statewide experiment in A&D called Goals for Georgia. It formed the basis for Carter's White House Global 2000 program, a zero-growth, one-world blueprint. Now, all of these things, as far back as 3 years ago, I have recommended that all of my listeners read, simply because they point the way that those who tout the New World Order want to take us. After two unsuccessful runs, Gingrich was elected to the U.S. Congress in 1978 with the backing of the Toffler A&D apparatus and the support of New Right guru Paul Weyrich. Gingrich's campaign organization was largely comprised of counterculturists, radical ecologists. Gingrich and Jimmy Carter had built up a Georgia-wide branch of the Sierra Club and outright New Age kooks. As soon as he entered the Congress, Gingrich created the Conservative Opportunity Society, which Time magazine, at the time, labeled a noisy, buffoonish fraternity of outcasts and troublemakers. Gingrich brought the Tofflers and other futurists into the Conservative Opportunity Society to transform his nominally conservative cohorts into a band of third wave Jacobins. You know who the Jacobins are? That was the form that Adam Weishaupt's Illuminati took once his branch in Bavaria was destroyed. According to documents obtained from GOPAC, Gingrich's nominally conservative political action committee, Gingrich's partnership with Jimmy Carter continued through at least 1994, and in January 1995, a speech before the Progress and Freedom Foundation, Chairman Newt openly cited his involvement in the A&D project as critical to all of his current work as Speaker of the House. And if you don't grasp the importance of that, I don't know what to say. According to the EIR study, GOPAC was turned into an instrument for A&D social engineering as soon as Gingrich took it over from former Delaware Governor Pete DuPont in 1986, while the Federal Election Commission and the House Ethics Committee's outside counsel are both probing whether GOPAC was engaged in a pattern of illegal campaign financing using tax-exempt funds and other illegal devices to elect a farm team slate of freshman Republican congressmen. The Executive Intelligence Review study focused more on GOPAC's use of Tavistock sensitivity training, which was one of the major articles in the last issue of Veritas, and other literally brainwashing techniques to install a collection of near zombies into the United States Congress who would be willing to fall on the sword to ensure the dismantling of the federal government. And that's one of the reasons why what's going on in Texas is getting more suspicious by the minute. Especially, you know, I wasn't really suspicious until the guy lied on Saturday night and said that the World Court was not a part of the United Nations, knowing full well that it was, in a blatant attempt to get the listeners to go away. Didn't work.
When you cast your eyes upon the skylines of this once proud nation, this is the adultery, growing arms of population. Value, oh, use, are being seduced by the greedy hands of politics.
Now, you'd all better listen very carefully to this, and I mean very, very carefully. I had a call from a friend of mine whom I haven't heard from in years, who works in a bank. He told me that during 1996, the dollar will be devalued. I asked him if he could give me some kind of documentation or confirmation. He said, Bill, he said, I haven't even talked to you in years. I wouldn't call you if this wasn't true. I told him I still couldn't act upon it without confirmation. And so I couldn't say anything. I put out feelers amongst my people, and just the other day I received this letter back, and I don't even know if this is one of the people that I put out a feeler with. But he sent me this sworn affidavit, signed, notarized, and sealed. State of Oklahoma, Carter County. On this date shown, December 17th, 1995, Don, and I'll leave out his last name, personally appears before me to make the following statement, and having first been sworn and deposed to state, such is the truth as to what he heard stated by Darrell on Sunday, December 10th, 1995. Quote, the new $100 bills are due to be released in January, and all the older types will be recalled with only a 48-hour exchange period. They hope most of those having lots of cash won't exchange them, and all that money will be wiped out. I asked when the recall is to come. He said about March. He also stated they plan to, later on, devalue our money by about 20 to 1. That could come many months later, perhaps more than 12 months into the next administration. Signed, subscribed, and sworn before me on 12-17-1995, signed by Janet D. Smith, notary, and sealed. Now, that still wasn't enough, ladies and gentlemen, so we set our people in Washington and in Maryland and in Pennsylvania to work to discover some evidence of this, because they couldn't be doing this quickly without something to back this up. And the people at the banks wouldn't know about it if there were not some paperwork involved. And we got it. We got it, ladies and gentlemen. It's Senate 688. Senate 688, 104th Congress, first session. To provide for the minting and circulation of $1 silver coins. In the Senate of the United States, April 6th,
Legislative Day, April 5th, 1995. Mr. Murkowski, for himself, and Mr. Grassley introduced the following bill, which was referred to the Committee on Banking, Housing, and Urban Affairs, a bill to provide for the minting and circulation of $1 silver coins. Listen carefully. Be it enacted by the Senate and House of Representatives of the United States of America in Congress assembled. Section 1, short title. This act may be cited as the United States Silver Dollar Coin Act of 1995. Section 2, $1 coins. A, color and content. Section 5112B of Title 31, United States Code, is amended. 1, in the first sentence, by striking the dollar and inserting the, and 2, by inserting after the fourth sentence the following, the dollar coin authorized under subsection A, 1, shall be silver in color, shall have a distinctive edge, and have tactile and visual features that make the denomination of the coin readily discernible, shall be minted and fabricated in the United States, and shall have metallic and anti-counterfeiting properties similar to those of United States clad coinage, except that the dollar coin shall be a clad coin with 3 layers of metal, including 2 outer layers of silver. The dollar coin authorized under subsection A1 shall contain not less than 1 gram of newly mined fine silver. B. Adjustments to silver content, section 5112C of Title 31, United States Code, is amended by adding at the end the following. Notwithstanding subsection B, the Secretary may prescribe the weight of silver in the dollar coin if the Secretary determines that such action is necessary to ensure an adequate supply of dollar coins to meet the needs of the United States. C. Design. Section 5112D1 of Title 31, United States Code, is amended. 1. In the fourth sentence, by striking the dollar half dollar and inserting the half dollar, and 2, by striking the fifth and sixth sentences and inserting the following. The obverse side of the dollar coin shall bear a likeness of President Dwight David Eisenhower, and the reverse side shall bear a rendering of the Iwo Jima Memorial. D. Effective date not later than 30 months after the date of enactment of this act, the Secretary of the Treasury shall place into circulation the $1 coins authorized by Section 5112A1 of Title 31, United States Code, in accordance with the amendments made by subsections A, B, and C. Now, what that means, ladies and gentlemen, is they have amended Title 31, United States Code, to change the definition of a dollar and the content of silver, so that instead of $1 containing 1 ounce of silver, it will now contain 1 gram of silver, which is a devaluation in excess of 25-1. I hope you understand what I just told you. And if you don't have any real money, you better get some soon. You had better get some soon. 1-800-289-2646. Call and talk to Frank. 1-800-289-2646. Get your hands on some real money. This is no joke. This is an actual Senate bill before... Aye, Chihuahua. 1-800-289-2646. Take care of business before it's too late. Take care of business before it's too late, ladies and gentlemen. I don't want any of you to get hurt in what's coming. I don't want to see you in a ditch begging for food.
been watching you for ages, like a boat without a mast, drifting with the tide of destiny between the future and the past. I am a lighthouse. I am a sea. I am the air that you breathe.
Okay, folks, let's go to the phones and see what you got to say about all this stuff. I don't care what you want to talk about, just talk. Good evening. You're on the air.
Phil from Florida.
Phil, can you talk a little louder, please?
Yeah, this is Phil from Florida.
Okay.
You say there's going to be 1 gram of silver?
1 gram of silver.
Well, that works out a little bit better than 25% then, I believe, partner. There's 454 grams, I think, in an ounce, isn't there?
I'm not quite sure. I don't have a table in front of me.
Yeah, and there's 9/10 of an ounce of 0.999 fine silver in a real silver dollar. So that works out something like 468.6 coins per ounce of silver. Which seems to me to be
I think it works out to somewhere around 25 or 26 to 1.
Hmm.
And I also had a call, and I should have something in my email from somebody else that's on this list called me and said that there is a message in my email which elaborates on this, and I haven't had time to go through it, and AOL has been screwing around with my email again, so I haven't been getting a lot of it. But if I get clarification, I will announce that to you.
Oh, yeah. Hey, I think I got it. I believe I got my grams and grains mixed up.
Yeah, I think you did.
I think you're 31.1 grains of silver in an ounce and 454 grams in a pound or something. Yeah, I guess that's the way it goes.
Okay.
Well, I thought I had some news for you, but I see as usual, you're right. Keep up the good work, partner.
Okay. And then, you know, don't hesitate to call if you think I'm wrong, because sometimes I am.
No, I thought it was, I had it in my head that it was 454 grains to the ounce. It's 454 grains to the pound.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay, well, take care now.
Okay.
Have a good show.
Thank you. 520-333-4578. 520-333-4578 is the number. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hey.
Hey, turn off your radio.
Bill.
Yes.
Mike from Boston.
Hello, Mike.
How you doing?
Good.
Hey, I was reading Nun Dea Coward Conspiracy over 20 years ago. What do you think of the group that put that out?
I think that Nun Dea Coward Conspiracy was a book that helped wake up those of us who began leading the charge to wake up the ones that are awake today. There was some things wrong with it. They didn't even touch on the secret societies at all.
Not at all, no.
But it helped, aside from my experience with naval intelligence, helped to pull my head out of the sand.
Yeah. If you got me thinking, my mother grabbed it at a dentist's office about 23 years ago, and, well, I've been listening to you over a year now, and I tell you, you hit home with a lot of good information. I've you know, gone to the library, looked a lot of things up, and, well, if you're right about this devaluation of the dollar,
Well, that's the only thing it could be. They're actually making amendment to Title 31, which defines what the dollar is.
Has that been signed into law, 688?
No, what we have is the legislation. It was introduced in the Senate. As far as I know, it has not been signed into law, but could be at any time. I maybe already have.
Well, I'll give my senator, two senators, Kennedy and Terry, give them a call tomorrow and they have to say. And
you see, this actually changes the definition of a dollar.
It certainly does. Well, it looks to me like they, if they do devalue the dollar, that could be, you know, the beginning of the of the end as far as our system as we know it.
Well, we know it's got to come. If it doesn't come as a result of this, we know it's going to come anyway, because one of the goals of the socialist New World Order is to eliminate the middle class. And the only way you can eliminate the middle class is to destroy their economic, their base of their economics.
Well, they've been working on destroying the middle class for a long time.
Well, don't you think they're doing a pretty good job?
I know they are. Personally, I know they are. Well, I'd say that would be the way they could bring it about. I know that the figures that they give us for unemployment rates and the...
it's all stacked.
It's all...
It's a lie. They do not count people who are on relief. They do not count people on welfare. They do not count people who are unemployed, whose unemployed benefits have run out. And they do not count the homeless, the sick... the people, they don't count any of those people. They're not counted as unemployed.
No, I tell you, I collected unemployment 15 years ago for a short period of time, and after that, I guess they called me unemployable. And
no such thing.
No. Well, I'm self-employed to a certain extent, but only seasonally. I tell you, listening to you most every night and some other shows as well. I tell you, up here in Massachusetts, the economy hasn't been good for years, and it doesn't look like it's getting any better.
Massachusetts.
Trashitude, we call it.
Thank you for calling.
Have a good night.
Good night.
Thank you.
Also, ladies and gentlemen, in Congress, bill number House Resolution 330. House Resolution 330. The official title is a resolution authorizing the Speaker to declare recesses subject to the call of the Chair from January 5th, 1996 through January 23rd, 1996, waiving a requirement of Clause 4B of Rule 11 with respect to consideration of certain resolutions reported from the Committee on Rules during that period. This is extremely dangerous. Number one, the House Committee on Rules reported an original measure, report number 104-445, on the 3rd of January. Also, on the 3rd of January, it was placed on the House calendar, number 174. On the 5th of January, it was called up by the House as a privileged matter. And on the 5th, the resolution was agreed to in the House by a yea-nay vote of 224-190. And... it was record vote number 8, and there is no information available. You can't get what was in this resolution, but I'm going to tell you right now, it has paved the way for a quick, very quick, with no warning, passage of the anti-terrorist legislation supported by the House and the Senate, H.R. 330, and... of course, there is another one, which is, where is it? I can't find the number of the other one. H.R. 2768. Extremely dangerous legislation. And tomorrow night, maybe I'll talk about what's included in that legislation. It's got to be stopped. Good evening. You're on the air.
Mission, Texas. How are you?
Good.
Hey, I just wanted to ask you about the dollar. You said that it has been it's going to be devalued. How about all the paper dollars? Haven't they been pretty badly devalued already?
That's called inflation, my friend. Same thing, but just a different technicality.
Okay.
When it's devalued, that means you actually change the definition of what the money is. When it's inflated, that means it loses value through the printing of worthless paper.
See your point, and I'm glad you're making the points that you're making.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Anything else?
That's it.
Okay.
You bet.
Good night. 520-333-4578 is the number. Good evening. You're on the air.
Bill.
Yes.
Bill Howard from Philadelphia.
Hello.
heard you mention the mailing list or messing with the email?
Yeah, on AOL.
Yeah, I think I fixed that.
So you did? How'd you do that?
Well, let me tell you. Let me tell you. If you're talking about the mailing list that was just set up, if you want me to get tell people.
Oh no, no, I was talking about AOL, the email. If you're a subscriber.
Well, sometimes AOL lags behind. If they get a lot of email in at the same time, they seem to have a problem distributing it.
They had a big problem recently. Hold on, don't go away. I was looking for the stuff for the list. And this is Howard, right?
Correct.
Okay. You want to tell people about the list?
Yeah, let me tell people how to subscribe to the list.
Okay, that's a good idea, because I'm a little confused on all of this, because I've never done it before.
Well, that's okay. I straightened out. I got about 20 people that came on today, but it went to the wrong place, but I got it.
Okay.
All right, here's how you subscribe to the list. It doesn't matter if you're on AOL or Prodigy or CompuServe or if you just have a direct internet provider. You send email to the following address, and this there's no spaces in these words, Major Domo, spelled MAJORDOMO, the at symbol, which is the symbol above the 2 on a computer keyboard, POBOX.com. I'm going to spell that out letter by letter. Majordomo at POBOX.com. That's MAJORDOMO, the at symbol, POBOX, as in xylophone, period, COM. Majordomo at POBOX.com. And you only put the following words in the body of the message. Subscribe, space, Kaji, C-A-J-I, space, your address, which would be whatever your email address is. If you were on...
For instance, mine would be C-A-J-I at AOL.com.
Right.
And somebody else's would be whatever theirs is.
Exactly. So in other words, it's really quite easy. You don't have to put anything in the subject line. All you need is to address the message to Majordomo at POBOX.com, and in the body of the message, put in subscribe space Kaji, C-A-J-I, space your address. And even if they do it incorrectly, in other words, if somebody puts something wrong in the body of the message, it'll still get kicked back.
Okay.
So it won't get... It won't get lost forever. It'll just kind of get put aside for a little bit until, I guess, either you or I find it.
Are those called bounce messages?
Yes, which I'm sure you've got plenty of.
So if they bounce, there's something wrong with them?
Correct.
Okay. And yeah, I noticed there was a bunch of them there, but they seem to have the information right. Maybe it's me that doesn't understand it.
Let me tell you the reason why they bounced. when you put a message out, you had said, send email to Kaji at POBOX.com, which is actually the list address, not the address to subscribe.
Oh, okay.
It didn't matter. I got them. So I was able to catch them and subscribe them.
Uh-huh.
But that's why you got all those bounce messages.
Well, I'm learning.
and as to AOL, I can't vouch for their email. God knows what they
do. No, I'm searching for another provider, but until I find one, I'm sort of stuck with them because I'm way out here in the country.
Well, you share the problem with a number of other people. I had the same conversation with Gene Schroeder, who said that he had nobody in his area within 90 miles, and everybody was a long toll call.
Yeah, that's right. Same here.
Could you give me the bill number that you were talking about? The
of the the money?
Yeah.
S-688 in the Senate of the United States, April 6th, Legislative Day, April 5th, 1995. 104th Congress, first session.
Yeah, the Internet has become quite a boon to be able to look at these bills as they're coming out. And what I've noticed is that they're constantly changing the numbers. So you might call them up and ask your congressman, can I get a copy of S-688? And he'll turn around and tell you something like, oh, well, that bill is dead. But then they renamed it.
Yeah, or they put it in an amendment and tack it onto a bill that nobody would even read, such as the cat food bill for feeding stray cats in Timbuktu.
Well, listen, they tried to pass gun laws in Pennsylvania by sticking it to the end of an amusement park bill.
Uh-huh.
So that's certainly not passed the legislature at any level. Anyway, I wanted to get on board and at least get that message out.
Thank you.
And we'll straighten it out.
Okay, I'm glad that you did call, Howard. I was going to call you tomorrow and discuss this on the phone and announce it tomorrow night. But
I'm glad I was able to pick you up on the radio. In and out, jamming like crazy out here.
Great. Well, okay, wonderful.
Good night, Bill.
Thank you, and good night. Folks, what he's talking about is we've started our own list on the Internet, which will probably be the best source of real, documented, good research information that you'll find anywhere. So if you have a computer and a way to subscribe, I suggest that you do it. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yes, Bill.
Make it real quick because we're out of time.
I'm a silversmith. There's 31.1 grams and a troy ounce. So whatever they're going to use for dollars, your silver is going to immediately cost you $31.1. That's all I have to say.
Okay. Thank you. That's it, folks. See you tomorrow night. Good night, and God bless you all.
When you cast your eyes upon the skyline, the books, what's the proud nation? Is it India? Is it hatred? Growing the hearts of the population. By the greedy hands of politics and how the truth. The Christian generation, the Christian generation, reared on a diet of precious bits and misinformation. The Christian generation, the Christian generation, open your eyes, open your imagination. Sedated by the gasoline fumes and hypnotized by the satellite into believing what is good and what is right. You may be worshipped in the temple of man or locked in the prison of religion, but you can still walk back to heaven when you've nowhere left to run. The Christian generation, the Christian generation. A precious gift and misinformation. The beaten generation, the beaten generation. Open your eyes, open your imagination. The special. And keep us from evil. The most of guilt to fill upon their tongues when they can't just kill them. The freedom lives in the barrel of a one-one gun. The beaten generation, the beaten generation, reared on a diet of prejudice and misinformation. The beaten generation. Yeah.